Thank you very much, Gopala. I think kind of that was a very, very valuable and helpful recap of what we've seen. And as I said, kind of time is limited. Kind of we're talking about 8 weeks left here, roughly. And still we're missing some vital information from ESMA, as Gopala pointed out. The XML definitions that we've received in July this year were in draft state, so there's some information still missing. Which of course basically kind of puts more pressure on the issuers and their ability to prepare the information in time. Nonetheless, we try our level best to address any questions that you have. And as I said, kind of we have received dozens of questions in the last days, which is fantastic. And thank you very much for submitting all this information. As I said earlier, kind of many of them basically dealt with similar or the same topics. So we've clubbed them together and basically kind of condensed them down to a list of the top 20. What we cannot answer though is content related question or the interpretation of fields. As you know, there we can actually kind of encourage you to reach out to ESMA at securitization@esma.europa.eu. Please submit your questions to them for those type of questions directly to ESMA, who will update the Q&A document on a regular basis addressing those issues. We focus on the technical. We can help you with the interpretation of timelines as well as on the technicalities. That's hopefully what we're able to do. And so what we also have done is in kind of we have the top 20 questions here, and we try to actually kind of cluster them further into actually kind of questions that can be very easily addressed, and we call them the yes-no questions, which you actually kind of see on the next slide. So the first one actually kind of, so I will read them out basically and then kind of turn to my colleagues for basic kind of guidance on this one. So kind of once the ESMA templates are applicable for those deals that were issued in 2019, kind of will there be any data quality scores? You know that European data warehouse beyond the ECB completeness scores calculates its own data quality scores to highlight the kind of data quality of the submissions. And I think I'm turning to Gopala, kind of maybe he can basically kind of shed some light on what we are planning at the moment.
Yeah, so if you can remember the regulatory timeline slide. So we expect the ESMA templates to enter into force sometime in February, end of February. But however, we expect to become a securitization repository only in Q4, as Irene mentioned earlier. So during this time period, the XMLs are in force, but the question is where to submit them. And the answer there is, going back to the level one text, this what applies here is the transitional period in the absence of a repository, where these templates need to be submitted to a website that meets select criteria, including secure uploads, data quality checks, and so on and so forth. And we do meet all those criteria. So you can submit these XML templates directly to our website, even though we are not yet a securitization repository. However, there is flexibility in how you submit these XML templates. You can simply upload these XML into our document store and still be compliant with the regulation because of the fact that we are not yet a securitization repository and there is no mandate to perform data quality checks. So that's part one of the answer. Part two is that we will be working through for the next 6 months with ESMA on our whole application process. And as part of the process, there will definitely be back and forth in terms of how many rules we can build, what rules would be hard rules that end up in content errors and rejecting the file, and what rules will be soft rules wherein we simply raise awareness or seek clarification from you but not reject the file. And because of we expect this 6 month long process in terms of our ESMA application, the DQS scores will begin only when we become a repository and not earlier than that.
Excellent, thank you. So another popular question is you kind of dealt with the confidentiality issue. We know that confidentiality has been was still an ongoing problem for some issuers, but I think kind of if we look at this question, when you convert data from one format into another, I think kind of, Gopala, would you agree that actually kind of there is no GDPR issue?
No, there is no GDPR issue. The CSV that you submit to our converter will immediately be deleted as soon as the conversion happens. And you will have delete rights on the downloadable XML files as well. So you can, we cannot determine when you download the converted XML. Therefore, we give you the ability to delete that XML if you wish to.
Okay. You also basically kind of, you've seen on the slide, Rupa, that you presented, actually kind of that a package that you deliver actually comprises the underlying exposure information, significant event, as well as the IR. So kind of what about basically kind of do, when there is a significant event, does it also mean that data providers have to submit the investor report? Do they actually kind of sort of have to repopulate the information, resubmit the same information? I think kind of, Irini, actually kind of, can you just kind of share your view?
Yeah, according to the final RTS that were published by the Commission, it is clearly stated there that the moment that, for public securitizations, the moment that the information on underlying exposures and investor report is made available, then the actual inside information or significant event information should also be made available via securitization repository, and that would apply on a quarterly basis for non-ABCP and on a monthly basis for ABCP. However, we understand that significant event or inside information may occur more frequently, and therefore we would expect that it may be submitted more frequently. And there, I think maybe Gopal, you can elaborate a little bit on the XML structure or
Yes, so exactly for this purpose, the XML has the investor report piece as an optional piece of that XML. And the significant event piece is a mandatory part of the XML. So every time you submit an investor report, the significant event has to be there because it's mandatory information. And however, as Irini just mentioned, given that significant events can happen outside of these quarterly periods, you can, when such significant events do happen, then you can submit only the significant event templates, which contains the tranche level data alone, without the corresponding investor report template, which is optional. However, the other way around, if you intend to submit loan level data, investor report has to be submitted together with it. And because investor report is only the optional piece, it naturally means that significant event also has to be submitted with it. So when you submit underlying exposures, all three pieces are mandatory. However, you can submit significant event alone separately in case of a true significant event.
Okay. So I'm talking about submitting information in the new ASPA template. I think kind of Irini, you've told us that there will be this period of dual reporting coming up in the probably kind of most of 2020. Mm-hmm. Kind of, and having this kind of this legacy ECB template and the new ASPA template, that you kind of, and doing both side by side, of course, is I think kind of an unnecessary nuisance for most issuers, kind of, is there a way out?
Unfortunately not. So from February onwards, when the templates, the ESMA templates become applicable, then the actual, in order to comply with the securitization regulation, you will need to submit the ESMA templates for all the new transactions issued post 2019. And of course, for those who seek the ECB eligibility, they will also need to submit the ECB or whatever CRA 3 templates, if you want to call it the mandatory fields of the ECB templates, for the eligibility purposes, for ECB eligibility. Therefore, we will have this dual reporting period that is unavoidable at this point. And of course, we have seen that there is also an announcement by the European Central Bank on the 22nd of March, where they clearly state that they will actually endorse the new transparency requirements under the regulation, but that will only happen after two conditions have been met, and that is when the new templates have entered into force and when there is a securitization repository in place. 3 months later, the ECB will change the eligibility criteria, and then the new ESMA templates will be also applicable for eligibility purposes.
Okay, so it's unfortunate, and kind of you have to do reporting during that period. At least if you look at the Excel file that I posted on the ESMA website, I've seen that those files actually contain sections. So can you drop kind of some of those sections kind of in the CSV? Basically, kind of every section is represented by a separate CSV file. And basically, the question here basically, it's not a CLO or not a synthetic where we have special sections. Can you leave them empty?
Yes, for the purposes of whenever you report for any securitization, which is not a CLO or not synthetic securitization, then the specific sections that are applicable only for a CLO or only for synthetic, these do not have to be reported. So, and maybe there, Gopal, you have something to say?
Yeah, again, there as well, the XML makes these sections optional, so they need not be populated. And naturally, if you want to use our CSV to XML converter, you need not even submit blank files for these sections. You simply need not submit any file for these sections.
Okay, thank you very much. But Gopal, I just mentioned it. Kind of, we learned from you in the last one of the two last sessions that the XML files are significantly larger than the CSV files. So do you also then kind of compress them? Kind of that basically, kind of, we've seen also with the ECB reporting regime where you compress these files to make them a bit smaller?
Yes, ESMA has made these minor technicalities, has given rather the freedom to the securitization repositories to come up with these minor technical gaps, if I may call so. For instance, in terms of file compression, how should the files be named, and so on and so forth. Are any size limitations on the file? So all these pure technical implementation questions, ESMA has there given the freedom to securitization repositories, and therefore, in order to make life as smooth as possible for you, we stick to the same conventions we have been doing for the ECB regime, where XMLs or CSVs need to be compressed. We will follow pretty much similar file naming conventions and so on.
Another thing, actually, from your experience, because I think if I recall correctly, I think in April this year, we created a sandbox environment for all our customers, basically kind of to just kind of use it for free and kind of to test their submissions and kind of. So is that possible also now, actually, kind of to use it for ECB data uploads? So with the ECB data files. So if you just want to do more than just ESMA testing.
Correct. So the sandbox environment is where you can test everything that happens on our actual live production environment. In terms of the ECB world, given that everything is well established, the templates have been stable for the last 4 years, it's life as usual. You can test everything on sandbox and then check your score and then move to production. But just as a gentle reminder there, even in the production environment, we have a draft state, thereby making the upload on the sandbox environment in a way redundant, because you can upload to the draft state, check everything, and if you feel there are errors, you simply will not publish it. But yes, in true sense, you can use the sandbox environment. There is a slight difference for the sandbox in terms of the securitization regulation, where in the sandbox, it's not only just a playing field for you to test what is before reporting on the production environment. Here, because we are not yet a repository, we are in the sandbox environment, we intend to stay ahead of time, act as if we are already a repository and make available these features to you, so that you know that once we become a repository, what challenges you might face much ahead of time, and you have enough time to solve all those challenges. Simple, very basic example is the data quality check and the content error. The moment we become a repositories, we will be rejecting certain loans because they fail certain checks. And our goal is to build these checks in the sandbox much ahead of time, giving you enough time to prepare once we become a repository.
Okay, thank you. The question that came up, I think, kind of because we have a slight change in how these will be dealt with, I think kind of, Irini, could you shed some light on it, basically kind of on the use of which templates are mandatory kind of for certain asset class? I think there's a slight change from the legacy procedures with the ECB regime.
There was a specific question whether the auto template can be used for a pool which is comprised solely from underlying exposures that are leases. So there, I think the actually final RTS have specifically addressed this point by explaining that indeed, although there is an ambiguity and sometimes it's possible that an underlying exposure type may fall under the different annexes, that in the case that the pool is comprised solely by automobile underlying exposures, then these should be reported using the actual template on automobile underlying exposures, regardless of whether these are comprised, these are loans or leases. So in this case, of course, as we actually do think the correct way to report would be to use the actual auto template for those cases.
Okay. Thank you. Another question that actually is coming up very often, as banks are kind of find it easier to create or to produce CSV files than XML, we provide the opportunity, kind of as Gopala mentioned, to convert those CSV files into the corresponding XML file. And the good news, actually, kind of the question is always, actually, kind of, is the service for free? And the good news is, yes, it is for free. We do this for you, and it's basically kind of a service that we provide to our customers. So if you have created a deal on the European Data Warehouse platform, and kind of this is part of your package, and you are more than welcome to use the service for free to create the CSV file on your side, give it to us, upload it to us, we convert it to you, and return basically kind of correct in the correct XML format, because that is just prescribed data format that you will have to use once the disclosure regime will come into force in February. So so we can finish this strategy. It's good news for our customers that, and the answer is yes. There were kind of beyond this yes and no answers, there are also some questions that require for, one basically kind of where the, we would like to actually kind of give a little bit more extensive answers. You can see actually kind of, we were able to provide very quickly and straightforward answers, but kind of I think here I would like to kind of turn to Irini real quick, because you already mentioned it actually kind of in your slide regarding the exact point in time when you actually kind of have to flip from the ECB/CRA 3 templates to the new ESMA templates.
Yes, it seems that actually it is expected that in February, mid-end February, the RTS may enter into force. So in that case, the moment that the the ESMA templates become applicable, then for any securitization that use our services to comply with the securitization regulation, then they will have to start reporting using the ESMA reporting templates. And I think there we also have another question which is very relevant.
So we have basically kind of the questions on how long this ECB reporting will still be required, as well as we have this phase out once the ESMA becomes mandatory. And so I think kind of if we kind of just looking at Gopala here, shed some light on this dual reporting, as well as this phase out of the existing ECB regime kind of and the phase in of the ESMA regime, and how these actually kind of things collide.
Yes, Irini has already mentioned these timelines in our first slide very clearly, but we did put in these questions, although the answers are pretty much the same. We have just put in these questions just to illustrate the fact, the amount of confusion that exists presently. So the ECB reporting will be required. Let me divide the answer into two sections. First, let me talk only about the deals that fall under the securitization regulation. So for these transactions, the ECB reporting will be required till 3 months after we become a repository. So till then, irrespective of when the RTS enters into force, either in February or in March, because that happens first, you will have to submit those XML files. But ECB has clearly published in their March release announcement that they will switch to the ESMA template for ECB eligibility purposes only when both the XMLs enter into force, plus a repository exists. And a repository can exist at the earliest only in Q4 2020. And therefore, until that time, ECB reporting has to be done for deals seeking ECB eligibility. And that's also when it will be phased out. In terms of deals that do not fall under the securitization regulation, there is no need to switch immediately within 3 months after a repository exists. There, ECB has been a bit considerate and given a 3-year time frame for these old deals to switch from the ESMA templates to the ECB templates. I think the assumption there is that most of these deals would anyway become inactive by then.
Okay, thank you very much. I think kind of just going back on what you explained a bit earlier, Gopala, so I think this question actually kind of falls into your turf, especially on the XML feedback message, kind of in case of a failed XML upload, kind of since there, if there are errors in there. So the customers here would like to understand if EW would get this file and translate what error is causing the file to upload, and basically kind of what information it kind of can provide. Can you shed some light on this process regarding the feedback message?
Yes. So those of you who are already familiar with Editor as it is today, so if you upload an ACB deal with the ACB template, usually you get the results of our data quality checks in the following format. So we give you every check that we run and how many loans have failed that check. So that's what we do today. The situation will be kind of done in a different perspective under the new securitization regulation. Instead of giving you everything from a perspective of data quality checks, saying this check has 10 failed loans, this check has 20 failed loans, we will simply reverse the perspective and give you this loan has failed 2 checks and this loan has failed 3 checks. So you would get granular loan by loan detail as required by SPAN. That's what the feedback message will contain. If one loan has a maturity year of greater than 2100, that which is obviously false, you will get in the feedback message saying loan ID with this loan ID number is failing check ID XYZ. And if you look up check ID XYZ, it would be maturity date should not be greater than 2100. So that's how the feedback message will be. We did get on this note another question which is not listed here. There was this assumption that these feedback messages go to ESMA. That's not the case. These feedback messages are simply a bi-directional exchange between the issuer and European Data Warehouse. Nobody else can see this feedback message. Therefore, in order to make understanding of these feedback messages easier, we will also provide not only this XML format, but also in Excel format. But what this will contain is, in case of the whole file is rejected, it will contain the reason why the whole file was rejected. And if only few loans were rejected, it will contain why those loans were rejected. Just going one step beyond, if a loan was rejected for more than one reason, it will contain all those reasons as well.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for the extra insights here. One of the insights, actually one of the lessons that we learned, was basically kind of a what seemed to look like a failure in our sandbox environment, where actually kind of an error message was produced that actually kind of that a securitization identifier is in use, which is actually a very, very rare case. We've never had this before. My colleague Irini looked into this. I think kind of she kind of shed some light on actually what happened.
Yes, as you all know, we have many of our clients already testing using Sandbox actually to test the uploads of the ESMA templates. And of course, one of the fields there, the required fields, is a securitization identifier. And we have actually noticed this rare case where apparently one client received, one user received the error message that there is already a securitization identifier. And this can, of course, we actually do have a validation in the system to prevent having duplicate securitization identifiers, because these securitization identifiers are meant to be unique. And when we have many users from the same reporting entity using our sandbox environment, it could be that they create a deal or a securitization with the same securitization identifier, which happened in this case. And of course, our system was rejecting the second attempt of creating the same securitization identifier or testing this file.
Thank you very much. Kind of, we have already received one question from the group actually kind of about when the new CSV to XML converter will be usable. And actually, so this actually kind of is a nice transition. Thank you very much for your question, because actually kind of is one of the questions that we also received in on the pack of questions that. And I think kind of what we see here, very nice. I think kind of Gopal, I think you can give us the latest. But as I understand, that conversion tool actually kind of has been ready for weeks now.
Correct. So we are extensively testing the converter. As you can see in the slide, the conversion tool already works for the following asset classes where it states ready. As a next step, we are working on credit cards. However, in terms of making this available, because this generates data in XML, which you will sign, digitally sign and start to upload once the XML is entered into force, we need to be extra cautious and extra careful in our testing efforts so that by mistake there is a technical bug that kind of interchanges two fields from the CSV and dumps the wrong field in the wrong place in the XML. We do not want this to happen, and this is why we are testing the converter extensively before making it publicly usable. So we do have received the same question from at least 15 issuers in the past 3 weeks, but we have taken a pretty strict approach there in terms of weighing between timeliness on one side and the quality of the tool on the other side. We would of course put the quality first, especially given what this tool is being used for. It produces an XML which you will have to digitally sign and upload saying that is the correct XML. So to avoid any kind of liability issues, we are extensively testing it, and we plan to launch a version before the end of this year, or worst case in the first week of January. And this conversion tool will be available as a service. So you can either log on to a dedicated website and simply upload a CSV file and download the XML, or you can upload the CSV into a separate FTP folder, which you will have access to, and either download the XML from the output folder, or if there is an error, you can download the error log. Here, just to note that going back, we did mention earlier in this webinar that the templates are in draft state. So we continue the coverage of other asset classes. However, let's assume that in the second week of February, in January or so, ESMA releases the final versions of the XML and there are significant changes. We will immediately go back to the drawing board and again start from RMBS auto and so on, and kind of upgrade our converter by going back to the most popular asset classes.
So thank you very much for this. So you see that you kind of try our level best to basically kind of be ready and be ready for you, so that when these templates come into force, that you kind of, we create an environment that hopefully makes it easy for you to kind of provide, or basically kind of to have the necessary files available. One of the things that were specific to the ECB reporting regime was that whatever has been submitted, scheme was basically kind of had to run through a number of schema and content checks. So will we see a similar approach or similar scheme also apply to the ESMA templates?
The schema and content checks and the corresponding feedback messages are only the requirements for a securitization repository, which means they will be available for you in our production system only when we become a repository. However, as I said earlier, the moment we finalize the whole package of the conversion tool for all asset classes and we are starting our discussion process as part of our application to become a repository with ESMA, once we have this basic idea of what content checks can qualify as rejectable and what content checks we simply flag as warning, once we have this basic idea, we will immediately start making them available in the sandbox even before we become a repository. But for all formalistic reasons, the schema and content checks will be available for ESMA templates only once we become a repository. The only exception there being the schema check. Because ESMA owns the schema and we do not own the schema, we can instantly make the schema check available on our live environment, which will happen from January for all asset classes.
Okay. Great. So the next question, of course, is maybe Irini, if you can help here, kind of, and then the last one, which kind of also just kind of asked Coppola, the ND thresholds. For those of you not familiar, the ND, the no data thresholds, were introduced by the European Central Bank back in 2013, making sure that a minimum level of completeness of the file was achieved. If the information wasn't available within a certain period of time, the ECB then kind of applied a certain score to it, and that score could also basically kind of affect eligibility of the submission. The ESMA will adopt a similar scheme, but the thresholds basically kind of ways kind of when a submission actually is considered to be A1, so complete, or whether actually kind of it is below. Do we have any guidance on basically kind of when this will be released? We didn't find anything in the ITS or in the papers adopted by the Commission recently.
Yeah, we actually were expecting correctly to see it in the RTS on the operational standards of the securitization repository, because that's where ESMA first introduced the ND thresholds, along with of course the ESMA scoring that you mentioned. And but in the final RTS, we actually did not see these ND thresholds there. The ESMA scoring still is in place, but we would expect that ESMA will come with an announcement soon on the ND thresholds, maybe in the beginning of the year, definitely before the templates become applicable, because we would expect to see something from ESMA or hear something soon.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Irini. I think kind of you said one word, soon. I guess Gopala, the same also applies to number four, which you kind of, so we will see the final XML templates. We learned from you that these are only available in draft state at the moment.
Correct. So they are only available in draft state, and the moment ESMA publishes the final version, we believe it will also be available in the ISO 20022.org website, because these XMLs follow the ISO 20022 standards. The timeline is, again, you mentioned soon, to be seen, but we do expect it before February, because we do not see a situation where the Commission adopted templates enter into force, these XMLs enter into force, but ESMA has only published them in draft state. So that would be kind of a very tricky situation there, what happens. Therefore, we do expect, this is only our view, and we do not have any information from ESMA, but this is our best guess, that of course ESMA would publish these final versions at least 3-4 weeks before, which gives us a time frame of end of January, because I'm sure ESMA also would want the market to have enough time to amend the data generation in terms of the final XML versions.
Okay, perfect. In the interest of time, actually, kind of, and since we're a bit ahead, a bit over actually, kind of our kind of scheduled 30 minutes, I do apologize. So we can't really actually kind of deal with any kind of questions coming from the audience. If you have any further questions, please feel free to submit them to inquiries@eurodw.eu. We're happy actually kind of to provide any guidance we can. The other thing actually kind of, if you want further guidance regarding actually kind of the disclosure templates that were released in 2018 and 2019, or actually kind of an early, basically kind of, we call this gap analysis version 3.1, which basically kind of published on the latest smaller changes that the European Commission applied to these templates, we put together a gap analysis document. I think kind of it's more than 100 pages, everything all together with all the details. So it's a very, very comprehensive, very detailed analysis, hopefully providing some guidance that is available from European Data Warehouse, just that you know, actually kind of, and hopefully this document actually can help you in your preparations to fulfill and to be compliant with the ESMA reporting regime that will basically kind of come into force in approximately 8 weeks from now. That said, thank you very much for everybody on the phone. Thank you very much for my colleagues here in the room with me. I hope that actually kind of you, that our presentation actually kind of was helpful, and that we could actually kind of address many of the questions that we've seen. As I mentioned, we have received dozens of questions, many of them kind of repetitive, so we've condensed it down to these roughly 20 questions. I have to say, kind of, if there are any content-related questions or interpretation of fields, please turn to ESMA and submit your questions there. So from our side, from European Data Warehouse, thank you very much for staying with us. I hope that you found this education series, mini-series here, interesting and helpful. We will repeat it in early February again, kind of, for those that you kind of want to actually kind of hear it again, or basically kind of you have colleagues who haven't heard it again. And hopefully by then actually kind of we can also address some of the questions that we weren't able to in this series. But so from us at European Data Warehouse, thank you very much. And we wish you a very Merry Christmas period and a very successful and good start into a great new year 2020. Thank you very much, and goodbye from Frankfurt.